I'm Mike Lubick of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. And welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast, the final Sports Reporters Podcast of 2017. An incredible sports year, incredible year in general. And later on in the show, we'll take a look at what we thought were some of the biggest headlines and sports storylines, the biggest stars of 2017, and perhaps the best game. And that is going to be a pretty big one to determine. And I'm glad that the game we're going to start talking about is being held in 2018, so it's not a candidate, because when we look at Clemson and Alabama battling not for the national championship, that was an earlier part of this year, but for the right to play for the national championship, we are already looking in the playoff round at what could possibly be the game of the year if it were still in 2017. What a fantastic rematch. What a great opportunity to see these two teams play one another again. It's been a while since we've seen them on the field, Mike. What are we looking at now?
Well, first, the context of this game is that this is Alabama-Clemson 3 or Clemson-Alabama 3, the way we got Cavs-Warriors 3 in the NBA Finals. This, to me, is a perfect way to end the college football season, except it's not going to end the college football season. And I know people will always think that Vince Young beating Southern Cal was the greatest college game they'd ever seen. I think the one we saw the last time these two teams played was, and Deshaun Watson, one of the great college quarterbacks of all time, played the game of his life. He came back and won the game that he had lost the year before. And now, in an odd way, even though he's not in Watson's class, Bobby, he is a quarterback. Jalen Hurts, who ran 30 yards at the end of the game and just scored too soon at the end of last year's game, has a chance to come back and win this game the way Deshaun Watson did a year after he had lost it.
Alabama is here in the eyes of some as a fortunate son. They could have been they weren't sure they were even going to get in. It's interesting. But once they are in, the image of that they carry, prevails. In other words, so whether they're the fourth seed, second seed, third seed, or first seed, it's Alabama, and they command respect. They have been something of a flawed team this year. They've been very sporadic at times on offense, and it's not up to the level of maybe the last great Alabama teams we've seen, but it's still Alabama, and it's Nick Saban, and it's the aura, and it's fascinating that if we couldn't, let's say, if somebody said to us, okay, here's your yellow legal pad, guys, at the start of the season, what would you like to draw up to see in the playoff? Well, how about a third go round between Clemson and Alabama? That'd be fun. And guess what? We have it.
It kind of makes Georgia, you have to remind people that Georgia and Oklahoma are playing in this thing.
I know. And what about us? The JV game.
Well, there's two reasons for that. I mean, one is the legacies of these two teams in recent years are so large that they just outswell everybody else. I mean, you can't deny it. And Dabo Swinney has done something pretty remarkable in a Nick Saban-dominated world. And really, I would argue that Urban Meyer is right up there with him every year in terms of drawing attention. Dabo Swinney has become, you know, the 1A of coaches' names. And so you not only have your school names going against each other, which are huge, and star players like Jalen Hurts and others, but you also have these coaches going against one another. But here's the other thing that happens, and this I don't like about college football, Mike and Bob. You mentioned Golden State and Cleveland. That's great. And one of the things that's great about that is it starts in May, and it culminates in June. This thing starts in September, reaches this massive crescendo in the first week in December, and then you sit for 4 weeks waiting to see these guys. And I'm sorry, I love this game, but I have to rev myself up for it again. I had so much passion about watching these two teams, and we talked about it on our podcast. You know, every single week we were breaking them down and the advantage, and then this wait, and you don't even know who you're getting anymore because guys come back from injuries, guys aren't sharp, they haven't played competitive football in 4 weeks. I don't know that there's a solution to it, but I hate the gap. I hate the gap.
Well, there is no solution because they have found, you know, what they think is the perfect place in the sports calendar. And I, Mitch, I agree with you. I wish they could play the game 2 weeks after they come up with the Final Four. However, in another time in America, the buildup to this is a little bit like the buildup we used to get to heavyweight fights when heavyweight fights still meant something. And even the gap, I'll be as fired up to watch the Sugar Bowl on New Year's night as I would have been if they had played it 2 weeks in a row. And what you just said about Dabo, and in addition to everything he has built here, and I may be wrong on my math, I don't think I am, I think he's only got six seniors on this football team. So he's not going anywhere. And I think what's going to be interesting about this game in the year after Deshaun Watson finished two games against Nick Saban where he nearly rang up 1,000 yards in total offense, I think both of these defenses, and I think I think this is going to be a brutal game for the front seven on both defenses. Bob, they're going to make they're going to make the quarterbacks throw. And I think we're going to find out at the end of the game which one of them threw better, because it's going to determine who's going to the finals.
Well, it's an interesting theory there. With those type of run defenses that they have both ways, I wouldn't argue with that a whole lot. And chiming in on the weight thing, I've come to an accommodation with that, Mitch. I mean, it's not the best solution, but I'm okay with it, and I'm really looking forward to the day. And I'm glad. Let's address one thing. They had the common sense, good sense, to recognize a horrendous error in scheduling it on New Year's Eve.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
And now getting it on the right day, that where we don't have to worry about you know conflict, shall we say, as much. So I think that I'm really happy about that. If this were New Year's Eve, this would be a trauma all over America, but it's not going to be. You know, we have this issue. John Harbaugh's raised this issue about the start time with his game on Sunday, with people having prior plans, and now they have to worry about conflict with New Year's Eve because they're starting at 4:25. Well, we don't have that problem with this game. That's a good thing. So the calendar's cleared. If you're a sports fan, you know what the one and only thing that you're focusing on New Year's Day is, in fact, these two games.
One of the great things about having teams return and play each other again is it nullifies one of, I think, the biggest negatives that goes on in college football now and all of college sports, is that the average fan doesn't know who the players are because they haven't been there long enough. You know, the star ones, you know, play a year or two and they're gone. This is especially true in basketball. But even in football, it can be 2 years and you're out. Or, you know, you could be a junior, but you didn't play your freshman year, you know. So, and here we have Jalen Hurts is a known commodity. You know, Jalen Hurts was a star going into last year's game. He was a star all season long here. And Kelly Bryant has stepped up. He's not Deshaun Watson yet, but Deshaun Watson became Deshaun Watson a lot in the game that he played last year at exactly this time, when he, you know, managed to, with 2 minutes left, direct the team downfield. And if you just watch those last 2 minutes, it's just masterful. And, you know, Mike, you talked about the game. It was such a good game.
Oh,
I mean, 9 seconds, 6 seconds, 1 second.
Yep.
Remember, they got a pass interference in the end zone. They got down to the 1 yard. And you could, if you're an Alabama fan, you're just going, clock, run out, clock, run out, clock, run out. And, you know, with 1 second left, they basically throw the pass into the end zone. Kelly Bryant has a chance to do that again, and I think he's going to have a chance. I don't think Alabama is as good as Alabama's reputation is. This is not their best team. Even before they lost to Auburn, it wasn't their best team. And Clemson's better. Clemson's defense is really, really good. So I wouldn't be surprised if Kelly Bryant has a star-making moment, the same way that Deshaun Watson launched himself into the NFL off of last year.
I'm going to be looking at the Alabama defense. They had three linebackers less than at their best in the Iron Bowl. Mark Wilson, Christian Miller, Terrell Lewis. They were all banged up, and they really haven't been healthy at that position for a while in this season. And so, has this been a Nick Saban defense? No. But could it be a Nick Saban defense on Monday night? Yeah, it could be. And, you know, it's funny. I remember the way, Bob, I remember the way the game ended with Jalen Hurts, and then I went back and looked at his stats, and, mm-hmm. and that run kind of overshadowed, which was a pretty pedestrian performance by him statistically, passing mm-hmm. and running the ball last year. And so I just think he comes into this game with a lot to prove. And Bryant comes in with something to prove, is that we're not losing that much at the quarterback position, even though Deshaun Watson's gone.
No, that's the great story there, is that the transition was so relatively seamless with only one loss in a game which he was not participating, I must say. And it is a story.
Well, he participated.
Hey, a little bit of love. A little, just a teeny weeny little smidgen soupçon of love for the other game. Why, before we depart, because we do have the Heisman Trophy winner there. We do have the most explosive offense in America there. And we do have a Georgia team that can run the ball with a guy named Nick Chubb. And it's not like this is a boring game. It's not like this game doesn't have some attraction. Granted, it's not. Doesn't have all the trappings of the other game, but I just want to stick up for a little bit.
Bob, Bryant played half against Syracuse. He played half against the Syracuse before he got concussed. Yeah, no, it's, but Mitch, when you look at the not the prelim, because it's the two teams are too good. It's not a JV game by any measure. Not with the old crotch grabber Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback. But
you're never going to let him forget that, are you?
No.
Man grabs his crotch once in his college career, and you're just going to torture
him
over
it
forever.
You pay and you pay and you pay. Yeah, yeah. No, but Mitch, when you look at this game, and this one to me is a little more easy to analyze, because it's going to be a question. Can Georgia run it well enough that they keep Baker Mayfield off the field?
Well, you know, thank you for mentioning running, because this is the first time in the discussion we brought it up. And, you know, I'm sorry, but every time you watch a college game, it is usually running that makes a difference. Now, that running is frequently by the quarterback in these big games,
right,
but
right.
It is running. It is running. And when you've got Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel, that's major league running. And, you know, we're forgetting, and again, this is part of the problem with, you know, the gap, and you tend to fall back on more familiar, famous names and programs. We're forgetting how good Georgia was for a huge part of this year. Georgia was a dominant number one team for a huge part of this year, and they fell out. They came back again. And there is no question in my mind that they have an offense that can plow through Oklahoma's defense, which to me is, that's a two-headed monster too. Oklahoma's defense was pretty good at the beginning, terrible in the middle, and good again at the end. I don't know what it's going to be when they get out there. But Georgia's a force. And if I were betting, I mean, yeah, you hate to go against a crotch grabber, let alone a Heisman Trophy winner and a quarterback that's great. But I like Georgia's chances. And let me just throw one other thing out there to finish up in the big picture on Alabama Clemson. Do you know Nick Saban is 66 years old? It's hard to remember that because he wears the same haircut that he wore when he was here at Michigan State. You know, it just gets thinner every year, but it's the same one he wore in The Blind Side, the same one. So you can forget. He's 66. Dabo Swinney's 48. And Dabo Swinney's an Alabama alum who builds this program in Clemson. You know, Clemson is not exactly Destination USA. Okay, there are a lot of people that can't even tell you what state Clemson is in. And Alabama has the advantage in that department. It tells you what state it's in. But I think what he has done up against a Nick Saban world is pretty remarkable at his age. And this is, he's not a fluke. You know, like 3 years in a row with this thing.
Oh, no.
Do you think, I mean, this program is here to stay, don't you think, with him?
One little recruiting aid that he has is that he's kind of, the word is kind of out. You might actually go and, dare I say it, have that three-letter word when you play at Clemson, F-U-N.
Yeah.
And he's a charming, he's a hard guy not to like, quite frankly, in the short run. I mean, I have been in his company last couple of years at a big sports affair, and he's awful hard not to like in the short run, I can tell you that. I don't want to say in contrast to someone else that he might be going up against shortly, but you know what I mean. And he has established the idea that you might come here, you're going to win games, and you're going to enjoy yourself, young man.
He ran Jimbo Fisher out of his conference the way Nick ran Urban Meyer out of his conference, because they both kind of took a look at the future, one at the SEC, one in the ACC, and said, you know what, I'm going to go try it someplace else. And I know that Urban had all of his other reasons for leaving, But they Dabo's not going anywhere any more than Nick Saban's going anywhere. And the shockwaves of this. All right, but before we move on from this, okay, Bob, who's gonna be playing in the college football championship game?
I think it's gonna be Clemson and Oklahoma.
I like Clemson, and, Georgia.
But you know, just because you put that proverbial gun to my head, I had to make a pick. I hate picks, yeah. But I'm going along with the program. Clemson and Oklahoma wouldn't be. I guess the next fair question is which reversal of fortune which surprised me more, and I guess I would say Georgia beating Oklahoma, because I do think Clemson will prove itself to be superior to this particular edition of the Alabama Crimson Tide.
I got a funny feeling about Alabama. I believe that we have not seen their best game all year. Now, Mitch, mm-hmm. that means we may have seen who they are all year. Mm-hmm. But I got a feeling that being thrown this life preserver by the committee is going to rouse them on Monday night. And I think the championship game might be, because I don't want an all-SEC final. I think it might be Alabama against the old crotch grabber.
Well, let's not forget. Let's not forget that a few weeks ago we were debating whether Alabama belonged in this thing, and now we're potentially picking them to win it all. Just keep that in the back of your mind. Remember,
they were not
teetering on the edge of 5 versus 4, Ohio State versus them. Isn't it interesting if they end up winning this thing? What that's going to do in hindsight to the perspective of how this whole picking system is supposed to be so much better. And, you know, we could have almost knocked them out. Just something to keep in mind.
But I think it was better. I don't think Ohio State belonged in. I mean, when you say we were debating, I thought Alabama, absolutely, even after losing the Iron Bowl, was demonstrably a better team than Ohio State. Right. And I think they belonged. That's all.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Bobby.
Now, gentlemen, there are some guys who actually get paid officially to play. It happens often on Sundays.
Officially, yeah.
Yeah. And so we have week 17 of the NFL season. And what we have, quite a few games of interest, in my opinion, based on playoff ramifications, even if we're just talking about seeding. But we are talking in a couple of instances about who can get in the tournament. And I think clearly the marquee game of the day is Carolina and Atlanta. But a game among others that I'm curious about because of the recent history. No, Buffalo. Buffalo still is alive. Buffalo still has a chance to end the longest drought in the league. They're getting the playoffs. They're playing Miami, and they're coming off a bitter defeat, in which the owner, I think, has rightfully called into question the rule book. But there's a lot of interest. I think there's quite a few. The Chargers, aren't you curious about to see if they can go from 0-4 and actually get in? That'd be a nice little story. So I think there's a lot of subplots
Chargers,
out there.
I love it when a team comes along, and if the Chargers do make it, Mitch, where going forward, if they do make it, it'll be, you know, no team since the 2017 Chargers started off 0-4 and made it to the playoffs. The one team that I keep looking at, because we talked about it in our last podcast, and they play pretty much the last game of the day with the other 425 games, are the Ravens. The Ravens, to me, you know, we always talk about mystery guests, Mitch, throughout the season. The Ravens, to me, even in a down year for Flacco, are a dangerous January team.
Oh yeah, I mean they're a dangerous team. Period. I mean, you know, they have been there before with the coach and the quarterback still in place, and it's one of the reasons you never really count them out. And they have a very good chance of actually making this, and they have a chance of doing damage in their first game. Do I think they're going to end up in a Super Bowl? I do not. I don't think they're going to get beyond the second week.
But
I think they're an intriguing team. But there's only, in my view, there's only one. There's one story, and then there's the rest of the stories, and that is last year's Super Bowl participant, the Falcons, fighting to actually get into the playoffs. Now, after everything else, they still have their fate in their own hands, right? If they win, they're in. Right. After everything that has happened here, I believe they end up with the tiebreaker against the Seahawks if Seattle should win as well. But this, who do they have to play? Carolina.
Yep.
And you know, I mean, the Seahawks are playing Arizona at home. That ain't exactly, you know, if they lose that, they got a lot of, as Ricky Ricardo said, you got a lot of splaining to do, Lucy. But if the Falcons losing to the Panthers, a team that's you know, two games ahead of them in the standings right now, is no big deal. But this is intriguing to me. For all the ups and downs that the Falcons have had this year, do you have one thing left inside you that says, we are not missing the freaking playoffs, okay? We're a Super Bowl almost winner, and maybe we're not going to get to the Super Bowl again, but we are not missing the playoffs.
And, Mitch, when you look at them, every time we've thought that they had picked up some real serious positive momentum, then they play a game like they play against the Saints, and you're thinking, wait a minute, that's Matt Ryan out there, and there were moments where you thought he'd never score another touchdown. And Mitch, when you talk about the Panthers, and Bob, here's what's great about sports, okay? Cam wins that game last Sunday because he drops a ball that comes right back to him, and then he scores a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Now, in the immortal words of Semi-Tough, that ball ain't round. It'll bounce funny on you, okay? Yeah. If that takes a funny bounce here, think of all the ramifications that bad bounce would have had for so many teams last Sunday.
Yeah, good point. It's in one place like that, though, if the timing of everything, and he just waltzed into the end zone.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, very interesting.
Unbelievable.
Point.
Well, I still, just to finish on them, I still like the storyline of a team that is still trying to recover from that Super Bowl hit, having one game to save. I mean, there's a big difference between missing the playoffs and getting in at 10-6. And what I always love pride stories, you know, like, okay, you're going to suck it up. Maybe you've had some games. I don't know. And Mike, you said, you know, that game against the Saints. But remember, the game against the Saints was against the Saints. The Saints are really good this year.
Really
the Saints
good.
Make a
really
lot of teams look really bad. This has been no cakewalk for Atlanta at the end of the season. They play the Saints. They play the Panthers. So I want to see if they have some moxie to knock off Cam Newton and to say, God damn it, we belong in the playoffs, at least. You know, we're not letting New England smudge us off the entire map here. And I'm really, really interested in this game.
We'll apply my friend Mitch Albom's theory. Where is the game being played? Oh, wait, it's being played in their fancy pants new dome stadium in Atlanta. And I think that's going to be a huge factor. I think this is a tough game for the Panthers to win on the road. I think a lot of points are going to be scored in that game on Sunday. And you're right. Listen, hey, how many times have we talked about the Falcons throughout the NFL season and reminded everybody that it's no accident that no team since the Bills has lost a Super Bowl and made it back to the big game? Well, they're not trying to make it back to the Super Bowl right now. They're just trying to make it back into the playoffs. And for all the hangovers that there have ever been in the Super Bowl, Mitch and Bob, there's never been a hangover because this, like this one, because there was never a loss like that one.
Nope, except for Seattle.
Yeah, but this 28-3, Bobby. We're going to get to that game.
Oh, I know, and that's funny how that numbers. Those are numbers that are going to haunt Falcon fans the rest of their lives. They've been taunted by it all year. People are holding up signs, 28-3, 28-3. No one's ever going to want 283, you know, Elm Street as an address in Atlanta ever again, you know?
Hey, by the way, and for all, you know, and we know, Bob, we know that Mitch Albom with the Lions is just living on easy street. Happy season after another. But Mitch, let me tell you something. I am an upstate New York boy. I grew up about 2 hours from Buffalo. Those fans there are great. And they deserve so much more than the ownership they have had over time and the management they have had over time and the coaching they have had over time. And even if people without any rooting interest in the Buffalo Bills have to be rooting for them to end the longest playoff drought in the sport and find their way back to January.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. A couple days away.
All right. Listen, before we get to taking a look at what was a fascinating year in sports, not quite as fascinating in sports as it was in the United States of America, but pretty fascinating. The holidays can be stressful, but figuring out what's for dinner shouldn't have to be. Should it, Mitch? No, I don't think so.
No, I say not.
No.
I say no, sir.
No, and who could debate that? Freshly delivers fully cooked, prepared meals straight to your door. You get to skip the shopping, the chopping, I don't know how much chopping there is. And the cleanup, all you have to do is heat them up and your meal is ready to eat in 3 minutes. The best part, Freshly's fresh. All natural meals cost 25% less than the average cost of takeout. For, especially for young people, that's pretty meaningful. And you'll never get stuck waiting around for the food to arrive. Right now, Freshly is running a special offer. Get 6 dinners cooked by their chefs for $20 off. To try Freshly out, just go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters to get $20 off your first week. That's 6 meals for just $39 plus free shipping. This offer is only valid for a limited time, so go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $20 off and free shipping.
This is Jim Miller, and Origins is back. Recently, I gave you a behind-the-curtain look into the groundbreaking comedy Curb Your Enthusiasm. Now, it's time to take you on another ride, one that's nearly 40 years in the making. Available now, the podcast series Origins with James Andrew Miller, Chapter 2, a deep exploration into the world of ESPN. In 5 different episodes, we will reveal previously unheard and unpredictable moments that turned ESPN from a ramshackle couple buildings into one of the greatest media success stories of all time. Spanning its early beginnings, its meteoric rise, to its current challenge state, you'll hear from all the key players, in front of the camera and behind. Look for Origins with James Andrew Miller on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you download your programs.
All right, 2017 coming to a close. I'm going to pose 3 questions out here. What was the biggest story, you know, long-term storyline of 2017, the biggest game in your minds of 2017, and who was the biggest single sports superstar of 2017? If we had our own version of the Sports Reporter's Athlete of the Year, who would it be?
Which question do you want? Question would you like to for us to address first? The first one you asked, the biggest, story.
Let's start there. What was the biggest story in your mind?
I think social protest in sports was the biggest story built around anthem protests. And what was interesting to me is, for years we have people have said, well, you know, where's John Carlos and Tommy Smith? Where's Ali? You know, where's Kurt? Where are all the people in sports standing up for causes? And then Mitch and Bob, when it finally happened in pro football this year, with anthem protests that had extended out of last season because of Colin Kaepernick and into this season, the immediate reaction from a great big part of America was, well, who do these people think they are? Even though that sort of protest is as American as the flag that people thought they were disrespecting, even though I thought they never were.
Well, you know, part of that problem is race. And I think we'd be very naive not to just hit it head on and say that's, you know, so here we go again in America. Well, you know, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. Race becoming a factor in some circumstance in America. I think a corollary to that, I think you probably, I'm going to say I agree with you, but what I find interesting for me is the Kaepernick aspect. A, he remains unemployed, and B, and I mentioned this once earlier during our podcast this year. As a history major, I'm fascinated by the age-old quandary: do individuals influence events, or events influence individuals? And name another individual in American life, aside from the POTUS, who has by one act and by one decision has affected as much as Colin Kaepernick did by taking that initial knee.
I would throw the question out there. So, but to what effect? Trying to look at this on the last days of 2017, I see a story that was huge. Mike, I agree with you. You know, and there are a lot of other candidates. I mean, if this didn't happen, you know, what took place with Rick Pitino and Louisville and the FBI. Certainly the McGregor Mayweather fiasco and that whole, you know, build up to that and everything. The LeVar Ball situation is as pathetic as it is, and the whole Ball family was a circus. But these were all big events. But this one clearly dominated. But now here at the end of the year, to what end? I try to be dispassionate about these things, and I try to look at how the media covered them. And I don't think we did an even job of covering this story. I think we way overreacted to it at the beginning. And by the end, there's a little agate box that says players who protested this past week. It's no different than, you know, an injury list. They put, at Seattle, this guy sat and this guy sat. In Cleveland, this guy sat and this guy sat. That's all it is. And I keep looking at, okay, so what changed? What affected? What changed?
I'm just totally just throwing it out there. I was a profound skeptic that these protests had anything to do with any perceived decline or real decline in NFL interest or patronage directly at the box office or television patronage or just water cooler talk. And I think I was proven wrong. I think there was more of an effect on turning segment of, here it goes, white America off than we originally realized. I think it's out there more than I realized. And so I do think there has been an effect.
Yeah. And by the way, I forget what the number is, and I should have it in front of me. I don't. The league did give a whole bunch of money to the players.
Yeah, wasn't it $85 million or something?
And as my kids like to say, Mitch, that ain't nothing. Okay. Yeah. And I like to believe in this particular instance, despite the way these guys were demonized by the president of the United States and called sons of bitches, okay, I like to think that this has become a positive story. I admire the players whose beliefs took them to a moment where they kind of stood up by kneeling down. And I do believe that consciousness by reasonable people, Mitch, has been raised because of these protests. It wasn't anti-military. It was never anti-military. No reasonable person thought it was anti-military.
$100 million, by the way.
Is it $100 million?
$100 million, dollars was the way.
That ain't nothing, Mitch.
It ain't nothing, but come talk to me in a couple of years and show me where that money actually went to make an actual difference. I work in the world of charity constantly. I see a lot of things that are done in the name of charity and grassroots organizations and all kinds of things. And it is a minefield to work your way through to see who's being effective and who isn't. And you got to be very careful where you, I'm not saying there aren't effective. Of course, there are tons of effective groups. But just because you put money at a situation, I'd like to see tangible change. Now, will that story ever be written 3 years from now, 4 years from now? Okay, here's where the $100 million went. Here's the difference in society that happened as a result of it. I doubt it. I mean, that's a heavily analytical story that, well, someone's going to have to spend an awful lot of time breaking that down. But I don't know. I just wonder where we're going to be talking about this later on. I think we all agree it was the biggest story of the year, dwarfing a lot of others and happily dwarfing LeVar Ball. But I do think the Rick Pitino situation, the whole Louisville and the FBI and the way that all that stuff is important.
But, Mitch, do you not believe that a corollary to this story is the fact that this man cannot get a job in the National Football League, and whether that fits a technical legal definition of collusion, and it probably falls more into the area of self-preservation on a lot of owners who were afraid to sign Colin Kaepernick. You cannot look at the quarterbacks who played a lot of football this year in this league and say that this man, because of his political beliefs, should be kept away from playing football and maybe not ever playing ever again.
Do you think he'll play next year? I wonder if when all this kind of, and you have a preseason, you know, where a team can sign a guy and say, oh, well, give him a chance, we'll work him in preseason, because it is a little dicey to take a quarterback on in the middle of the year. Do you think he finds a job next spring?
Mitch, look at what happened to the Packers this year. Okay. Did you, and nothing against this young man, he may turn out to be a fine NFL quarterback. Did you watch Brett Hundley, other than one shining night against the Steelers, try to play quarterback? Nobody can tell me that Colin Kaepernick wouldn't have given the Packers a better chance to make the playoffs this year than Brett Hundley.
I don't agree with that. You can't bring a guy in the middle of the year, teach him your entire system for a matter of weeks and necessarily get any better results than that kid got. The one thing that kid got was, what was he, 3-4 or 3-5. I don't know what he was when Rodgers was out. He had a losing record, but he didn't lose them all. But he's within their system. And what McCarthy said was, look, we're happy with what we have. Meaning, you know, we bought this. He's been here since training camp. He knows the routes. He practices with the team. You bring a brand new guy in the middle of the year and throw him in as your starting quarterback. I would put dollars to donuts. He doesn't have any better
Mitch,
record.
Mitch, did you watch some of those games? What system?
Yeah.
What system are you talking about where they were afraid to let the kid throw the ball? So, yeah, he knew all the plays, but he sure didn't get to run a lot of them.
Well, remember, it's not like Colin Kaepernick was winning a whole lot of games the last time he played football either. So, I mean, we can debate this from now until kingdom come. We're never going to know. But I'm more interested in the future as to whether I do think he ends up with a team next year. I really do. I think time will cool this down. If he's interested and if he's kept himself in shape and he wants to, you know, go to a training camp with somebody, I actually do think he's going to work next year. I think we might be surprised.
All
right, let's move on to the biggest game of the year. In your view, this is an amazing category. What was the best single sports contest of the year?
All right, listen, I was at both games. I was at the Super Bowl in Houston, and I was at the greatest game of baseball I have ever seen in my life, 13-12, Game 5 of the World Series at Minute Maid Park. And it is a great question, Mitch, but I have to say that the greatest modern dynasty in pro football, and one of the greatest dynasties of all time, the greatest coach of all time, the greatest quarterback of all time, were losing 28-3 in the Super Bowl and came back and tied the game and tied it by making 2 two-point conversions and ended up winning it in overtime. And Tom Brady at the age of 39 was able to do that, to get off the mat, to get his team to get off the mat. And even though he wasn't playing defense, as they changed the game, to me, that I said that Game 5 was the greatest World Series game I've ever seen. To me, that Super Bowl was the greatest game of pro football ever played in this country.
Well, that's hard to say there, but I think that you mentioned the one salient point, Mike, that as it was happening, I'm saying, well, this is nice, but it's not going to happen. They're not going to get it done. And the reason is because in addition to needing the touchdowns, they needed to score twice on the two-point conversion.
Right, right.
And I just didn't think that was going to happen. I just did not think that it would materialize, that they would then score twice on and score the conversions. But it's exactly what happened. Because I was going to say, I guess technically it was the last game of last year, because last year the college football playoff was on the New Year's Eve. I was going to say the year started off with quite a bang with that college football game, which is – and I was – were you – Mike, were you at the SC Texas game?
No, I was not. I watched it. But, Bob, you're right. You have to –
No,
I
can just say –
You have
so
to lump
say,
that
so
in.
So, for me, I wasn't at – this game, but for the games I have seen, that one remains in terms of, you know, personal experience of the best college football game I ever saw. But I certainly think this one was right up there with it.
Yeah, see, we tend to almost associate the national championship games with the previous year. You know, we forget that they're actually in calendar year. They're this. I think that Game 5 of the World Series, if you're talking about just a night of sports, that was remarkable. If that could have been Game 7. We wouldn't be having a discussion here. That ends everything. But Game 7 was a 5-1. You know, it was basically over after the first couple innings, and so it didn't have the dramatic finish that Game 5 had. So I would tend to fall into the Super Bowl category. I will say, I know it sounds crazy, but I did watch that Mayweather-McGregor fight, and you know, and I felt guilty paying my $40 or whatever I did for it, but I was fascinated just by the world that we live in now in sports, where you can mesh these two things. And for the first, what was it, 8 rounds or so, when McGregor was sort of holding his own with the thing, I was interested in that. It turned out to be, you know, not a whole lot. And I wouldn't put it up there with Brady's performance. I just thought it was intriguing, you know, in a world where sometimes sports events tend to be the same teams, the same guys, the same things over and over again. I thought it was.
And by the way, Mitch, may I just ask you, with three sons that I may have contributed to them watching the game, where did you get that fight for $40, Bob? Weren't you curious to where Mitch,
that jumped out at me too, Mike?
Was it more than 40?
Mitch,
I forget.
Mitch, it was kind of a little more than twice that.
So that's one of the problems when all you have to do is press a button on your remote control. You just tell yourself whatever.
I thought the first digit
it
was a 9 myself, but
And I think it was $90, Mitch. But I was going to say that you know, you're an even better.
In the Midwest, we get it in black and white, and we don't have to pay as much.
No, I was starting to wonder if it was actual the you know, that it might have been Clark McGregor and Bobby Mayfield,
or just the undercard.
Watched.
Yeah, you know,
sure.
It's funny. It went off just before the main match. I don't know.
But you know what, Bob, you know what? For all of the talk we had about Clemson, Alabama earlier in the podcast, think about that. We got Clemson, Alabama 2. We got that Super Bowl. We got Game 5. And then you can spread it out to the other sports, okay? How about Roger Federer coming back at 35 and then 36 and having the year he had out of nowhere and what was pretty much a lousy year in tennis across the board, once, especially when Serena stopped playing because she's pregnant. We got Nadal Federer back. It fell out of the sky this year, and that's like a sidebar to the stuff we're talking about in the other sports. And then you get Jordan Spieth winning the British Open the way he did. This was, for all of the Mitch and Bob, for all of the controversies, this was a year of amazing, great stuff in sports.
So
that's what we should remember always, I think, is that why we're even interested in this stuff in the first place. You know, like to think it's because we're still interested in the spectacle and the competition over and above the, you know, the subplots, the human interest subplots. And to me, it begins and ends with the competition, and everything else is secondary.
By the way, before Mitch takes us to the third question he asked to start this segment, okay, just remember one of the greatest definitions of sports I have ever heard anywhere, and it's by our old boss, Steve Bornstein at ESPN, who was once asked to explain why he thought sports and ESPN had exploded the way they did over the last 30 years. And he said, because you can't rent tonight's game.
Right. All right. That in mind, biggest sports star of the year. One person.
You want me to go first?
Well, go.
Tom Brady. Tom Brady, in a year of superlative performances, and I've listed Deshaun Watson and Roger Federer and Jose Altuve and Aaron Judge and all of the, and Giancarlo Stanton and all the stuff, Tom Brady did what he did, the greatest comeback ever in a championship game in pro football. And Mitch, not only is he still the GOAT, he did it at the age of 39 going on 40.
And he's continuing. You know, he's the winter book. He's the favorite now to win the MVP in the league, he's on the verge of, you know, who knows, another one is in the offing, another Super Bowl. Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the other guy I wanted to stick up for just because he's just so utterly and completely lovable, and it speaks to what can make that sport so interesting, and that is Altuve, who at 5'6". You know, is a wonderful baseball player. And I just contrast that two of the wonderful stories of the summer, where, you know, his ongoing greatness and the buoyancy, not just the skill, but the lovability of a guy a foot taller than him, gentle giant, if you will, a polite young man who has seen all the social graces to go along with his skill. And he's just getting started. And, of course, Aaron Judge. And I think that juxtaposition that baseball can harbor is two such distinctly different physical beings, but they have very similar attitudes and personalities and on their life. And I just think it's wonderful.
Well, I think those are excellent selections and great things for the future. I would throw out there, in a world where you don't find 5'6" people, and perhaps less likable, but undeniable in my view. And, Mike, I would even put him on the same shelf as Tom Brady. Maybe I just am weary of it. Tom Brady's beyond, you know, when you're the greatest of all time every year, I guess, supposedly. But I got to say Kevin Durant. I mean, Kevin Durant remember what he did to start the season to switch over where he went. Now, that, you know, some would argue, well, that was the easiest thing on earth. That's like water going down a drain, joining a superstar team. But it wasn't without difficulty for him. It wasn't without expectations. It wasn't without a lot of accusations of him you know, leaving and being disloyal and running for the glory and all the rest of that stuff. And the only thing you can do when you make a move like that and you say, I'm doing it to win a championship, is to win a championship. That's the only thing you can do to shut up your critics, and that's exactly what he did. And in the five games that he played against Cleveland Cavaliers, he had, and I'm looking at it here, 38 points, 33 points, 31 points, I don't have four, and 39 points in the deciding game five, and earned the MVP, and shut up, you know, the people who said, well, you know, what are you leaving for? Well, I'm leaving to win a ring. And, you know, in a year where in the NBA the story was moving vans, you know, and all the players that changed places on the board over the summer and followed his lead, basically saying, okay, you know what? Kevin Durant did it. I want to beat Kevin Durant. Yep. I think he is the sportsman.
Here's why I'm going to knock him down to the next shelf. Okay, everything you said is true. And he delivered in the biggest possible moment of his professional life, okay? But here's how I believe I can trump you on this. 28-3, 28-3, 28-3, 43 okay. for 62, 466 yards, the two TDs, the two 2-point conversions. Oh, did I mention he was 39 when he was doing all that?
Okay. Time for our parting shots, and Bob Ryan leads off.
You know, we all know the Cleveland Browns suck. They always seem to suck, but let's just put in perspective just how much they suck. They await Sunday's game in, oh boy, Pittsburgh, good luck, guys, the 2017 Browns are 0-15. Their two-year record is 1-30. Their three-year record is 4-43.
Yeah, it's not good.
And their record for the past 13 seasons is 58-149 with but one winning season. By contrast, the New England Patriots, over that same span, are 150-41 with two of their five franchise Super Bowl victories. Now, what's really wrong with this picture is that in Cleveland, the most popular sport isn't baseball. It isn't basketball with or without LeBron. It isn't hockey. No, it's football. All kinds of football. Football. People care desperately about football in Northeast Ohio. And if ever a fandom deserves better than what they have received in this century, it's the people who have been stuck with and who stick by the Cleveland Browns. I wish we could make them a donation or something, but you just can't share sports victories. No one really deserves the great bounty that we have experienced here in New England, and it's for damn sure no one deserves being stuck with the Cleveland Browns. Well, Happy New Year, Cleveland.
You know, sometimes a great game or a great moment breaks out in sports kind of out of nowhere, no matter what time it is on the sports calendar year. It happened last night when the Rockets, who have been great this season, were playing the Celtics, who've also been great, if slumping a bit lately. The Rockets didn't have Chris Paul, but that didn't seem to bother anybody very much as they were getting out ahead of the Celtics by 26 points. And then the Celtics played, and the Rockets stopped playing. And then in the last half minute, just about everything happened, including two offensive fouls on James Harden and the basket from Al Horford that put the Celtics ahead for the first time in the game with less than 10 seconds to play. You know how they always used to say you had to wait for the last 2 minutes for something to happen in the NBA. Actually, last night, it was the last 2 hours in Boston. Pretty cool, you know, unless you were James Harden.
New Year's means resolution, so here's a couple of resolutions I would like to see our beloved sports media industry adopt. Number one, no more LeVar Ball interviews. The man is currently nothing more than the father of an NBA player, which makes him about 1 in 500. Hardly a reason for a microphone. He's currently coaching two sons in the equivalent of a Lithuanian pickup league. Also hardly a reason to ask him a question. Anyone who sticks a mic in front of LeVar Ball in 2018 deserves the tripe that he will get back. This man's 15 minutes ended 15 weeks ago. No more LeVar Ball for 2018. Got it? Okay. Number two, the NFL draft takes place every April. if we don't start talking about it until April, it will still take place in April. The incessant, endless projections of NFL draft picks when you don't even know who's picking where is insipid and worthless and endless. It's also a huge industry, so analysts keep doing it. But really, nobody knows anything the morning of the draft. Why do we need to be projecting it 364 days in advance? No draft talk until April. And number three, Marshawn Lynch likes to be quiet. Our resolution should be, let him be quiet. That's it. Three simple resolutions. And my expectations are that next year at this time, like dieting and exercise, I'll be suggesting these resolutions all over again. Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast and for the year that we've enjoyed getting this thing off the ground and building an audience. We've had a lot of fun doing it, and we'll look forward to continue doing it into 2018. We do it normally every Monday and Friday. We've been juggling the calendars about a little bit, and next Tuesday we will be back because we want to get in those New Year's Day games, let's face it. And so we'll be here on Tuesday again. We hope everybody has enjoyed the podcast. If you do, you can leave a review. You can get it anywhere where you normally get podcasts, Apple, iTunes, etc. Meanwhile, for Bob Ryan and for Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a wonderful new year, and we'll see you in 2018.